We're doing Mishlei. We're up to what's called the 13th chapter. We'll start with Pasuk Chaf. Alechet Chachamim Yechkam Veroe Chesilim Yehoa. Holech et Chachamim. He who walks with the wise men. Yechkam. He will become smart himself. When a person is with wise people, he learns from them. We are most affected by the environment we're in. That's why we have to choose a positive environment. People often overlook that. People think, I'm going to my job, I'm doing my thing. No, we are greatly affected by our environment, by our children's environment, by the shul we go to, by the friends we choose, by the community we pick. Holechet chachamim yechkam. He who goes with wise men will himself become wise. Veroe chesilim, and he who befriends the fools, yeroa, will be broken with them. So even though the first one, he wasn't their friend, he was just walking with them. Nonetheless, being in their vicinity makes him grow. And where he's their friend, the friend of the fools, will be brought down together with them. Yeroa, he will find himself being bashed with them. And these are changes that happen, but they're subtle. When a person has certain friends, he doesn't necessarily sense the impact of that friendship. But we are affected. We're all affected. When we were first married, so my wife was teaching in an elementary school for kids who came from difficult backgrounds. And she came from a regular, fully observant home. And there were many things that she and I were both never exposed to. So the students decided they have to give her an education. After a period, we went and asked the Shiloh. He said, do you continue teaching when the students are really pulling you down? The answer we received at the time was, all of education is a tug of war. The students keep pulling down and you as a teacher keep pulling up. So long as you feel you're pulling them up and they're not pulling you down, so keep pulling. And the fact that they're trying to pull you down, yeah, that's what students do. Okay, but when we choose our friends, that's not like choosing the education system we're teaching in. Our friends, we have to be careful because their impact is very subtle. We don't notice it, but it's very real. Before you know it, people have developed the same attitudes to life, similar behavior patterns. We end up vacationing together, having similar aspirations. When your friends take every free minute and say, hey, when can I get to yeshiva? When can I get to Beis Medrash? How can I make my wife happy? So there's an attitude that's developed. But when we sit together and what we talk about is shooting the breeze and politics and make fun of our wives and make fun of our in-laws and it's a negative atmosphere, it becomes one's own atmosphere. It becomes one's own attitude. Ro'eh chesilim, befriending the fools, yeroa, is harmed by it. That's why it's so important to try and keep tapping into yeshiva. Not only online, which is obviously a great thing, but even to come into yeshiva. I find it often, but even when I'm busy with life, good normal things, you come back to yeshiva, you're hitting the reset button. So you're tapping into it. Rosh Yeshiva told me an interesting story this week. He said, a student of theirs enlisted, and then it came time that the students were supposed to take off and come back to yeshiva. They have a deal with the army that their students, after I don't know how much time, they come back to yeshiva for a month, I think, in the middle of their army service. This is part of their hezder. So all the students were coming back, and one student called and said, I can't, I'm doing such important work, I can't take off. You have to let me off the hook, I have to continue what I'm doing in the army. And the Rosh Yeshiva wasn't sure what to do because the student wasn't such a serious student all the time when he was in yeshiva. But the head of the yeshivot hesder said to him, I can't. If you break the agreement with the army, they'll break it all the time. Once you let one off, so then the army will constantly say, every student is necessary, we can't let anyone go, and then you'll destroy it for everyone. You can't do that, because then you'll lose a lot of students to this claim. You can't. They can manage. So the student came back to yeshiva, And the first 3 days he was learning seriously. And after 3-4 days he disappeared. So they called him up and said, "Hey, where are you?" He said, "Ah, there was a family event. He had to go." He comes back 2 days later. And at the end of that day, he goes to the Rosh Yeshiva and he says, "You got to get me out of there. I got to leave the army." So the Rosh Yeshiva asks him, he says, "A week ago you were fighting us not to come back to Yeshiva. You said what you're doing there is so important. And now you're telling me you don't want to go back to the army? What's going on here?" So he said, "Yeah, when I was there, that's what I felt like. But now that I'm back in Yeshiva, I hit the reset button. I look at life differently. I start thinking about what's important. What am I doing there? What's really important? What's the value of what I'm really doing there? I look back at the yeshiva and I say, wait a second, what was I thinking? I'm there and people are saying vulgar jokes all the time. I'm there and so many things are going on that are antithetical to the type of person I want to be. And now I look at that and I look at this and I say, wait, I don't want to go back. This is where my life is." So Shlomo Amel says, "Olechet chachamim yechkam." This was one of those students who was just going with the crowd. He wasn't exactly really into things, even this time when he came back. But it affects us. It affects us. And that's why, Laila Tov Yo, that's why a person has to try to be able to get that clarity, to come back to yeshiva, find a shul you like, a shir you like, a beis medrash you like. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Chata'im tiradef ra'ah. Ve'et tzadikim yishalem tov. Chata'im, the sins themselves are in pursuit of the evil doers. When a person does something evil, so they should realize that they're setting the stage for their own destruction. There's the famous story about the pirate who took away the bells. There were bells ringing near jagged cliffs, and the pirate said, "What do I care if other people hit these jagged cliffs?" And he took away the bells. This is in Aesop's Fables. And then one time he was nearing those cliffs, and there was a terrible fog, and he said, "Where are those bells? And now I can't know where the cliffs are." Right? And then he ended up bashing up his own ship on those cliffs. So that's the idea. Chata'im teradef ra'ah. Evil that a person does pursues the sinner. It comes back after, it comes back to haunt him. Ve'et tzadikim yeshalem tov. And those who are righteous, their merits ensure that they repeatedly meet up with payback for the good that they've done. So again, this is a recurring theme in Mishlei, and this is a recurring theme in life. When we do good, we're not only doing good unto others, but it's a cycle. It keeps coming back to the world, right? The Rambam in Hilchos Tzedakah, the Rambam says when we give charity, when we help charitable institutions, we have to realize we're not only helping the other person, we're helping ourselves, because the world is a cycle. One day one person's on top, the next day someone else is on top. So when you ensure that there's charity in the world, you're ensuring that your children and grandchildren will come to a world that helps one another. And then one day it comes back to help a person himself. When I was a child, I volunteered in Tomchei Shabbos. So the legend in Tomchei Shabbos was that there was one family that had received assistance for a year or two from Tomchei Shabbos, and then they got back on their feet, and then they became super wealthy, and they funded all of Tomchei Shabbos, all the meals for all the families, for the number of weeks that they received the package. They funded that number of weeks for all the families on the recipient list. Yeah. Pasuk Chaf Bet. Tov yanchil b'nei vanim. A person who is good, a person who is kind, will merit to see children and grandchildren to whom he will give his heritage, his inheritance to. V'tzafun la tzadik chel chote. The wealth of the sinner is really waiting for the righteous. The warning of Shlomo HaMelech is that when a person transgresses, he precludes his own children from inheriting him. Like we find with Haman. Haman had a lot of children and grandchildren, and ultimately all his wealth ended up by Mordechai. So, tzafun la tzadik, it's all held up for him. Now I have a question. We're continuing. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Rav Ochel Nirashim. There's a lot of food that comes to the world because of the poor that plow the fields. So who's eating it? The righteous, the wealthy. They didn't work so hard. By the same token, the yesh nispeh belo mishpat. There are people who die and they never were judged. The people go to war, people find themselves being killed. Even though they didn't do anything, there was never a judge and a jury. So,
but most people die without a judge.
Yep.
So I don't think he's talking about judge and jury on the human.
Yeah. So, what's he talking about here? First of all, Rav Ochan Nir Rashim is a comparison. He's saying there are a lot of people eating because of the impoverished who work. Our example today is we're all wearing clothing that were produced by people who were working very, very hard and very bad, under very bad conditions. So it could be that's the best thing they can have. It could be that's they can't get any better conditions. But at the end of the day, you have a situation where there's rav ochel. There's a lot of food, there's a lot of clothing, a lot of iPhones, a lot of wonderful things that people benefit from. That's the handiwork of a lot of poor people. So Shlomo HaMelech is describing a world where the wealthy people can enjoy what others have toiled for. The yesh nispeh belo mishpat, and you can also find people who are going to pass from the world and doesn't seem to be their fault. Their fault. Our sages say that not every person dies because it's his fault. This is a big discussion in the Talmud. Is yesh mita b'lo avon? Do people die without sin? Could be that that's just the way of the world. That Hashem created a world where people have a finite life, and even if they didn't do anything to deserve it, they're going to die. Yeah.
9 million children under the age of 5 die every year.
Okay.
Chances are they didn't really do anything.
Right, agreed.
So,
agreed.
That kind of credence to that.
What?
That certainly seems to give a lot of credence to that idea. It's not so
simple
that everyone dies just because they just
don't know. Right. So, if you're talking about children, so Chazal actually, one interpretation of the pasuk is that this is talking about children. Laila tov, Shabbat shalom. That the pasuk is talking about children that yesh nispeh, those who pass from the world, below mishpat, and it's not their punishment. The kids did nothing wrong to deserve dying. That's one understanding. It's
saying that it's the parents' punishment, really, for having to deal with the death of the child.
Okay. So another understanding is v'yesh nispeh, that those who pass from the world below mishpat, because they're not acting in justice, they're not acting in fairness with what they own. One interpretation is that it's talking about those poor people who are working for the wealthy. Yesh nispeh, many of them will pass from the world below mishpat because they have not been just. They find ways of cheating the owner, the one who's hiring them. They say, look, I'm so poor, and I'm plowing his field, I'm working on it. So that's another understanding here, v'yesh nispeh v'lo mishpat. Another understanding is that there are people that pass from the world, and there's no system that you can attribute to their passing, like the children you gave, the example of the children you gave. That yesh nispeh v'lo mishpat, there are people who will pass from the world, and there's nothing you can explain about why they should pass. You don't understand. Yesh nispeh, they passed from the world, v'lo nishpat, and there's no justice system that you can attribute it to, and the Talmud tells us that too.
Right.
That in some way, Hashem created death in the world, and it doesn't always mean he deserved to die.
Is there a lesson here, or is just that stating the fact?
I think it's stating the fact. I don't think it's coming to answer why. It's right. Coming to say, yes, this is part of the world.
Because this has also been something discussed for thousands of years.
Right.
How that
so that's another discussion of why. But accepting that it can be, that Hashem allows people to die, even though they don't deserve it, is also comforting. You can't always blame people. Like he said earlier tonight, you're going to blame 6 million? What about all those children? And so they didn't do anything. So you want to say it's their parents' fault. Okay, so that doesn't necessarily answer anything. What? Okay. So that goes back to our earlier discussion. That's another question. It's two different realms. You could blame the murderer, but if you're saying there's Ashgacha Pratit and Hashem chose not to get involved, so then that also leads to a question. Okay, so I think we look at it as both. That's the approach we've been discussing. I think blame is a harsh word, but say that. Yes?
It seems like this is still connected to inheritance, like generations. Because the two lines before it's one line before it's talking about leaving inheritance to your child, and then two lines after, and one line after it's talking about also the children, and then the line after that again, even. So it seems to be some correlation between leaving an inheritance to your kid and perhaps not.
So, I'm not sure. Chazal understood it as Rav Ochel Nirashim, that even those who are impoverished can produce a lot of food by plowing, that's a reference to students with their teacher. That even though the students might be impoverished, they might not know a lot of Torah, but they can still produce a lot of food, they can still produce a lot of Torah by keeping on plowing, keeping on pounding their teacher with questions this way and that way, that ultimately produces a lot. The Yesh Nispeh, and many of those students will find themselves passing from the world below Mishpat, because their behavior wasn't up to par. Just because they made it into the academy, they were learning, they asked the questions, and they were productive students, and they produced a lot from themselves and their teacher, doesn't mean that their behavior was up to par. And then Yesh Nispeh, many of those students will find themselves passing, dying young, below Mishpat. And the root of it all is that their behavior did not live up to the system that they were studying. Chosech shivto sonei vinoho. He who hates his son will withhold his staff. He won't educate the child or ensure that his behavior is up to par. We just said where that leads him to. So chosech shivto, he who holds back the staff, the rod, sonei vinoho, because he hates the child. Ve'ohavoho, but he who loves the child, shicharo musar. Right away in the morning, which is an allegory for the youth, he guides him to the proper way in life. And the word musar means helping a person move away from his mundane, crass desires. Musar means to move away. It means to be able to take control of one's animalistic desires. So a parent who loves his child helps him from his youth be in control of his desires. And if you think about it, we do that all the time when we train children to fast. So we're training them to control their desire to eat. We don't train them to fast every day, but we do train them Yom Kippur. When a child's younger, he's already fasting part of Yom Kippur. And children challenge themselves, let me fast another hour. Usually parents' arguments are in ensuring that the children will eat, not in ensuring that they'll fast. The child always says, let me fast until the afternoon. Let me just fast another hour. Yeah, you're training children. We're training them to be in control of their desires. Yes, meat and milk. You tell a child, you ate meat, you're going to wait another hour before you eat chocolate. You're training him to be in control. Yes?
All little kids after the fast are always like comparing, I did it for 3:30, I did it for 4:30. Well, but I was going to say, is there something, Moser also means to like transfer something, right?
That's Moser, I don't know about Musar. I think Musar is from the word Lehasir.
With the sin? I don't see the word
with the Samach. And limsor is also with the samach. But I don't think it's the same root, limsor and musar. Chazal understood the root of the word musar to be sar. And the root of the word you're saying, limsor, the root is meser. So I think it's a different root. Tzadik ochel lesova nafsho. The righteous eat so that they will be satiated. They're not looking to have all the sweets and eat dessert for 2 hours. They're looking to be satiated. So they're eating because they need to be satiated. Uveten reshaim techsar. But the wicked are always hungry. They're always looking for another dessert, another sweet, something else. And Chazal viewed this as an attitude in life. Tzadik ochel lesova nafsho. The righteous says, I gotta eat, I gotta be full, I don't have to walk around hungry, but I don't need every form of dessert. Very often people overeat, people have indigestion, people eat what's not healthy for them, what's not good for them. Why? Because they're not looking, they're not eating in order to be full. And then in such a scenario where a person's always looking for more amenities, so then the Navi warns, he'll always feel like he's lacking. Gee, I could really use a mint now. I could really use a caramel candy now. I could really use a good cup of tea now. It would be really nice to have a good cup of Turkish coffee now. You remember back in the day we had those excellent tea leaves. You remember back in the day, boy, did we have an apple pie. And you remember when we went to that restaurant, they gave an excellent dessert, that chocolate mousse with chocolate and hot chocolate fudge. What are you talking about? Are you missing anything? Are you lacking anything? But you just made my mouth water. I can imagine all those things. Right, but are you missing anything? So maybe you guys are missing something. We just had an excellent dessert. I'm saying we had, what a dinner we had here. All those pizza and everything. But you could sit here salivating. And it's interesting that Shlomo HaMelech calls it a rasha. A person who is constantly desiring things, he's called a rasha. There's a story, I don't know if it's true, but there's a story about a guy who was very, very wealthy and he had everything he wanted. And he sat down to the meal and suddenly he didn't have the wine he wanted with his meal. So he said to his butler, he said, what's going on here? Why don't I have the wine I want? And he said, look, no one here in town, I looked in all the stores, no one has it. So he quickly summoned his helicopter driver, and he said to him, I want you to go out there, and before I finish the meal, I want to have that wine. Here's the name. You're going to call on your cell phone as you go and find out which town has the wine. I want you back here within a half an hour with that bottle of wine. And they say that when Rav Moshe Feinstein heard the story, they said, that's a wicked person. And I never understood what was wicked about him. He's paying the helicopter driver. So what if he wants to have every desire? So what? So he wants that wine at the end of his meal. But maybe that's, Rav Moshe Feinstein learned it from this pasuk. Uveten reshaim techsal. The stomach of the wicked is lacking. I gotta have that wine at the end of this meal. Why? Now I still don't understand exactly why Shlomo HaMelech says that's wicked. Meaning I guess, part of that attitude is that attitude allows a person to be so self-indulgent that it stems from a self-indulgence that's wicked. That a person allows himself to like himself or to desire for himself to that degree where you have to assume, or the pasuk is telling you that it's not only coming to play here, it's going to come to play, it's already come to play in other places that were at other people's expense. But I don't know. Yeah, Nahum.
I've dealt with quite a few people in hospitality, and it is very much, first of all, like a self-absorbed type of mentality. But it's also like very much power and control. The two things that kind of come into play. So it's like if you're, in other words, like. Let's say you want to, the normal rules of something are A, B, and C. You want to say, I'm important enough that I supersede the rules A, B, and C.
and just go straight to D or whatever. So you want things to happen for you, and you're willing to pay whatever it takes to make it happen. But the ultimate mentality is that you are worth more than what should be normal. You're more powerful. You have the it's a very egotistical type of mentality.
I hear. Okay, I hear.
I was just going to say where we were saying it seems like we're talking about cause and effect, but it seems like this is the effect of a bigger mentality of someone that doesn't have control of themselves, and it's goes to probably a bigger. That's what the evil part comes from. It's not. It's because it's an example of an evil personality, someone that is constantly desiring for more physical things, and that's something along those lines.
It certainly seems like you're saying that this is the effect, because he's calling him a Rasha. That means he's already attained the title Rasha. And he's saying one of the attributes, one of the effects of being a Rasha is that his betin is always chaser. He always thinks like, I'd like to have something else. Right. I'd really like to have something else.
It's also with every physical desire. Sexual desire is the same thing. People chase it their whole lives and they never feel satisfied.
I hear. Okay.
The more you do it, the more the desire is still. The hunger gets sometimes even worse.
Sure.
It goes into crazy areas.
Sure. That's what Chazal said.
Right, the sheep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do one more pasuk. Pasuk Aleph. Chachmot Nashim Baneta Beita. The wisdom of women, or the wisest of women, builds her house. Ve'ivelet, and the fool, biyadeh hatilsenu, with her bare hands, she destroys her own house. So Korach's wife, in her pursuit of honor, she always wants more. You got to be the best. You got to be the Moshe Rabbeinu. She destroys her own house. And the wise woman, the wisdom of the wife of On Ben Pelet, she tells him, what difference does it make? So Moshe's boss, so Korach's boss, what do you need a hand in all this? Stay in bed. She builds her own house. She saves her own house. This gives a lot of responsibility to women. It seems like behind every man is a woman. Whether it's a great man, a great woman, or a destructive man, a destructive woman. The pasuk certainly gives us a tremendous weight to the women. The saying of Chazal is Yesh Alech Achar Ishto LeGan Eden Yesh Alech Achar Atzat Ishto LeGeinom. So I once said jokingly, but I think it's true, that what's the common denominator between both? They're both Alech Achar Ishto. They're both going after what their wife says. The question is, where is she leading them? So it sounds humorous, but this is what it says in Josephus, in Yosifun. It says that the wise men of Babylon were having a challenge. They said, who's the wisest? The king was sleeping. They said they'll ask a question and then they'll judge who gave the best answer. So their question was, who is the most powerful? So each one gave a different answer. Daniel said the most powerful is a woman. So they all said, why a woman? So he said, look, I'll prove it to you. The greatest warrior, when he finishes his battles, he comes home and he spreads them out before his wife and he says, look at what I did. And he waits to hear her answer. And if she goes, wow, that's amazing, so he feels great. And if she goes, so he feels lousy, so who's the most powerful? So they all agreed it was a woman. Afterwards, he went on to tell them, you're all wrong, I was just saying that. It's their Ribono Shel Olam. But he began by saying that, so you see, even there, they were all willing to concede that on some level, that's the drive. And the truth is that there's a very deep message here that unfortunately women don't get. But it is here, that if a woman knows how to make her husband feel like he's number one, if she can give him that feeling, she could bring him anywhere. If she can...
Kind of dangerous.
What?
Kind of dangerous.
Very dangerous. But you see, that's what Chazal were telling us. When Korach's wife tells him, you'll be really great if you'll only usurp Moshe, so look at where she can drive him. Look at Rabbi Akiva, Chazal tell us. Rabbi Akiva became the great Rabbi Akiva because his wife drove him to do that. She said, you can be great. You can be amazing. You have a potential to be great in Torah. Look at where Chazal pointed out to us the giants in Jewish history in every direction. Chazal repeatedly show us the wife was able to tell them by telling them, you can be great. Right? That's what a man wants to hear. You can be great. And then she can get him.
You want to hear you are great?
Maybe he also wants to hear you are great.
That is sort of saying you are great. It's saying you have to tend to within you.
Yeah.